Evening, everybody. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 1st, 2007. Celebrated 18 years. My home group is Common Solution, Charlottesville, Virginia. We meet at 7:30 on Thursdays. So if you folks are ever in the area, please come see us. I'm just going to try to I don't speak very often, and I'm really nervous. So I'm going to do the best I can here because when Billy asked me to come speak, I'm not saying no to AA ever. So I was the oldest of four. I grew up in West Virginia in an alcoholic household. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom was just liked to party. Pretty much everybody in their circle was an alcoholic. So I grew up around it, pretty much from the beginning. And as time went on, all of us children are alcoholics as well. I grew up on a prominent purebred Hereford operation and quarter horse in West Virginia. It was a show place, so it was very, very particular, and a lot of responsibility, and and a lot of accountability. We worked really hard, and the motto around there with all the men, who many of which were alcoholics, was, "It's their God-given right to drink if they work. The harder they work, the more they can drink. And everybody can pound sand. Beyond that." Early on, I was completely inept. I all the way through high school, pretty much looked at the floor, walking through the halls. I couldn't make eye contact. Not totally as a result, but my dad was of the mind that establishing dominance over me, forcing me to, look him in the eye, forcibly, and intense situations was a real, yeah, it just, I looked away most of the time. So they would get together in the afternoons. The guys at the farm get together a lot of the afternoons, pass around a half gallon of Henry McKenna with no governor in it. And they were always never had a governor. That was, and it was gone when it was over. So yeah, when they were there, they were just in a good mood. Everything was laid back. And, me being, my skin never fit, or being around them, it didn't really fit either. But in seeing them, in the way they acted, I really longed to feel like they looked. Because they looked like they had it all figured out, everything was fine. Of course, I didn't know what life was like beyond seeing them there. But and it was there in one of those events, and an evening, one evening when I was 13, that it got handed to me. After years of me wanting it to be handed to me, and I picked it up, turned it up, and put it back down. And was quickly informed that that wasn't enough bubbles flying to the bottom of that bottle. If you're going to drink, drink. Be a man. Drink. So I was trained well from the beginning. I didn't really, like I said, my skin didn't fit. I didn't fit in. I was kind of, I was kind of under the thumb all the time. As a result of his drinking and me having to help him at the farm and everything, I quickly was given a lot of responsibility, and tidying up messes and that sort of stuff. And when it was at its worst, I was probably just past 13, probably. Never knew what was going to hit the door, how he was going to be when he hit the door. And I had to make the evaluation very quickly because I was the diffuser, I was the distractor, the trying to keep things on an even keel. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Some of the events were life and death, and I was the one who had to figure out how to end it, make it stop. And those didn't happen more than a couple of times, but that was a lot of pressure trying to figure out how to make something like that stop. And they did. They did. They got stopped. Yeah, and I was his alibi whenever he went out drinking pretty much every night. He took me a lot and just took me along to be his alibi. He told me what to tell mom when we got home, and I had to say it verbatim. And yeah, I spent a lot of nights in the back of the pickup truck with no heat in the middle of the winter for hours while he was in a bar so I could be the alibi. Yeah, those were rough. Didn't drink that much until high school. Mainly just drank beer at parties, and I was always the first one hammered because I was drinking before I got there, so I could just be there. I couldn't be there without a bunch of people without already having been lubricated. I was the first hammer to first pass out. There's the thing about me, when I take a drink, it tastes just like another one until there's no more or until I'm out. I blacked out very often when I did start drinking a lot. But I didn't really drink that much till high school, after high school. Married right out of high school to get away from the drama. She was kind of doing the same thing. My siblings had gotten to a point by then where they could handle the situation, and it had lessened a lot. It had calmed down. So I left state, went to New Market, Virginia. I got a job on the farm there, and again, it's like I was a binge drinker. I didn't drink every day. I couldn't. My body wouldn't let me because I drank too fast and too hard when I did drink. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful my body wouldn't let me just drink till, it put me down. Yeah, we ended up back in West Virginia for a little while after that. Drank intermittently, like I said, once in a while, and usually got drunk at the most inopportune times, when she needed me the most. We just had a child while we were there. And came back for a while and ended up getting a job in Charlottesville with Kluge. I was hired to show cattle all over the country in Canada. And that was a lot. That was a lot of stress. Was responsible for a whole lot of money. Cattle were very expensive, responsible for a whole lot of money. And I had to calm the nerves. I didn't drink all, every day, but I drank most days after the work was done. On the winter run, it was a 52-day run from Colorado to Houston to Shreveport, Baton Rouge, all the way back up. I've been in some really, really sketchy bars. I've been in some nice ones. Zanzibar in Denver, where Every Which Way But Loose was filmed, was really rough. And I got lucky. I got too much to drink, and the bouncer, fortunately, was from West Virginia. And we connected, and he looked after me, made sure that no harm came to me, and I'm very, very thankful for that. Got me a cab back where I needed to go. Stuff like that happened all the time. I was also responsible for all the calving operations at Kluge's place at when I was not on the road. They were doing embryo transfer, so they were doing 80 to 100 births at a time, and they would synchronize them. Now that was a nightmare. We were very successful, very rarely lost any. But being there was when my drinking really took off. It really took on a life of its own. like I said, worked hard. I'll drink, get over it. First wife and I got a divorce. She had had enough, and I don't blame her. We got a divorce and got remarried. That marriage was going really well for a while, and my drinking got to a point in that situation where, it was either stop or else. So I stopped. And historically, I don't have a problem stopping. That time, I stopped for 4 years. But I was the most miserable person walking this planet. And she finally said, "Dear Lord, please drink." And well, that's all I needed. I was off and running. And next thing I knew, I was looking out over the top of the grass laying on the ground in the yard. That went on for a while. We were in, went to therapy because she asked for a divorce because she didn't want to continue to cycle, wanted the cycle to stop. She decided to leave anyway and did when she left. I was in therapy, going to therapy. I was in the therapist's office one night, one day, and was suicidal. Didn't really dawn on me that's, but she was good. She was good for me. And she made me promise that I would drive myself straight to IOP, first step in Charlottesville, and she'd go call ahead. And I did that. I went straight there because I knew. I knew I was in trouble. Got there, got going through the program, was doing okay, and found a higher power and a woman that was in the same classes and doing the same thing, and got all the way through it, made it all the way through, got our certificate and stuff. And next, not long after that, we were running. We were back out running hard. There was a lot of regrettable things I did during that period that I regret a lot. Again, I could stop drinking, and I did off and on all the time. So when I was at Kluge's, I had one night flipped a brand new crew cab three times with a truck full of people, dogs, and beer. Stuff was all over the daggone road. Thank goodness I was the only one that was hurt. I had to have my right ear sewed back on. Got charged with a DUI and don't know how, but got off on a technicality. My lawyer got me off. I have no idea how she did it. So I kept my job. So obviously, with so few consequences as a result of it, within a month, I'm back at it. Getting after it again. But back to this lady in the IOP, and we went to meetings, went to a few meetings, going through that. Got a taste of AA, and I was out for quite a few years after that. Just being getting more and more miserable all the time. I just couldn't hardly function day to day. Because I was getting zero ease and comfort from the way I was and the way I thought life was treating me. Prior to the program, my issues, my problems were from what everybody else was doing to me. I had every right to drink because of my past and what everybody's done to me, how bad they've treated me, on and on and on. So, fast forward to, hope I'm not going too fast here. Fast forward to December 31st, 2007. I was at a hotel, got a room there, celebrating New Year's Eve. Got absolutely smashed, didn't make it to midnight, got smashed, got taken to my room. Next morning in the afternoon, late afternoon, let me back up a little bit. Before that, in August of 2007. I was working at the time. I was working for a company, running a subsidiary of that company, and had just won a huge contract and was out celebrating. I was celebrating in a bar and went to leave after a few, and somebody at the door handed me a Jaeger. And needless to say, after a few hours later and quite a few more shots, was blistered and left to go home. And this bar was right on the edge of my neighborhood. So I just got out, drive through the gate, and I'm going 25 miles an hour home, almost home. And I get stopped, and there's all kinds of cops, lake cops, county cops, state cops. It's a whole pile of them. Got me out and sobriety tested and blew in the breathalyzer, and quickly determined that I definitely didn't need to be driving. So I got arrested, got taken to the county jail. And looking back, what happened that night was the first sign for me of God's grace helping me. And there's several places along my journey that I could see where this was the case, is that I was in there and I was a mess and had blown way over 0.2. And the deputy let me sleep as long as he could. And when he got me out, because they were going to do the blood alcohol, right? Take the blood. And he told me, he said, "Well, see, you've been, so remorseful and so easy to get along with. I'll try to let you go as long as I could, so we get this thing down to the lower level, the 5 days in jail and not the 10 days in jail." Which was a humongous deal, to me and my job and my future for sure. So I got enrolled in VASAP and did everything that you're supposed to do. I did everything that I was told to do to get the judge to go easy. I think that was the court. I think my case was in November. And I got before the judge and, thinking I had it all covered with everything that I had done, been told to do by my lawyer and everybody else. And he said, "Well, here's what you're accused of. Here's consequences for that. No gray area with this man whatsoever." Boom, done. 45 days. He said, "And I'll suspend 40 of them. You got to do 5 days. You got to do 5 consecutive days." Worst 5 days of my life. And when I left there, I swore I was never going to touch another drop of alcohol ever. I was never going to drink again. And I didn't for a while, until December that night when I was there celebrating New Year's Eve. Like I said, came back out the next afternoon thinking I'd be fine to blow into the interlock device, which I hated with a passion. I hated that thing. I don't know why, just something about it. I still have the mouthpiece of that thing prominently in a spot where I can see that thing every day. And I still get the same hate of that thing. So I went out thinking I was fine, because I'd been using this thing for a while already and I'd kind of gotten it figured out. And I went out and I blew it, and that thing went off like a bomb. There were red lights flashing and noises going off. And I knew that that moment was the moment when I knew that I was done, that I had gotten to that place where I was either going to go, one of the two doors. And I knew which way I had to go, and I knew I was done. Called my caseworker that afternoon, actually, and told him the truth. Didn't try to lie, didn't try to sugarcoat it. I said, "This is what I did. What do you think is going to happen?" I said, "Well, when you go get that thing that data pulled off of that device and it shows a fail, it's going directly back to the judge. And he's more than likely going to reinstate your 40 days immediately, which, I felt pretty certain that was going to happen. And I knew I was going to lose everything. I was going to lose my job and everything I spent all those years working for. And another instance of grace that's completely unexplainable is the results. I never, ever heard anyone mention anything about that fail after that. It went away. It just disappeared. I don't know where it got, what black hole it went into, or who put it in its place so that it never came back to me. But, after knowing it, I was done and that happened. I was like, no way you can squander this. This is a gift. You can't. Your whole life just got saved. But that one, with that one piece of grace, you cannot thumb your nose at that. You cannot go back and go back to doing what you were doing. So I was in IOP for the second time, and I was dead serious. I was on fire. I was doing everything they said. I was going to 90 and 90. I was doing everything I needed, was supposed to do, and then some. Where was I going with that? Anyway, while I was in IOP, they had a workshop. Somebody had a workshop scheduled at the Hinton Avenue Church, and they were going to take anybody that came through the steps in one day. And it was going, it was an introduction. It wasn't, we're going to take you all the way through the steps, right? And it just lit me up. I couldn't. I said, yeah, I'll give me more. And this is what I want. This is what I need. So after the event, I called him and said, look, I'm really super, really super excited about continuing, and going through the steps with somebody. So can you recommend a sponsor? He said, yeah, I got a perfect sponsor. So he recommended a sponsor that was a member of Common Solutions. That's how I got to Common Solution. And I've never had another home group since. Was God's grace again. Had a perfect group to give me great examples of how to live, how to put myself back together. I felt seen, I felt heard. And more than anything else, I was held accountable. Can't. I can't fix that. I can't explain that because I was raised to do everything that was suggested to me. So that part was easy for me. My first sponsor, the guy that he recommended to me, I asked him to be my sponsor and he said yes. And he said, here's book. All I want you to do is read stories in the back. Don't be messing around in the front of it. Just read those stories. We'll get together and cover, and just as soon as I can. We did. We got together. Obviously, I knew I was done, that my life was unmanageable. I did not have a problem with God, so that part didn't trip me up. And also during all this time, I'm single. I don't have any distractions besides work, which was a tremendous blessing. I was just so focused on getting better and doing what was suggested to me. Got through the third step, agreed to go through the rest of the steps. The fourth step was huge in my life because I call it the step that de-victimized me and allowed me to drop all the dread and all the baggage I've been dragging around forever. I realized it was up to me to let it all go. I could let it all go. And with all the other aspects of AA and the fellowship, it was easier to do. It was not hard. And that was, I can't tell you how liberating that was, because prior to that, all through my youth and growing up, I was the one who had to make sure everybody was okay. Everything was fine. Everything was handled. Cattle were fed. Whatever it was, I had to be that person. And to get that taken off of me, well, I can't explain that. That was tremendous. I did six and seven as suggested. Eight, we made the list on eight. Again, sponsor was, he did, I don't know. He, again, it's God's graces again, because he just seemed to know exactly what to say and what to do to me and with me, so that, I just accepted it. I didn't kick back once. Of course, I was sick enough where I didn't want to anyway, but he was really, really good at just saying what I needed to hear and keep me moving. The ninth step got started and was just super liberating. I mean, it was just super. The most of the amends went really well. It was a little difficult, and then I did have people say, "What are you talking about? You're all right. What are you talking about? You're not an alcoholic." It was hard to explain, but after a while, it's like, "Look, I got to do this." So, have I done anything else to hurt you? I'm not aware of. And just did what I was told. A sponsor told me, called him before. Did follow direction. I said what I need to say, and I shut up, let them talk. Most were really, really good and have great relationships with everybody. Most everybody that I made amends to, but the one that was difficult was my father, because. A little backstory is that when I left home and started doing okay, I would come back home frequently because we like to come back home. And he, we'd meet up, or we'd be at a family function, and he'd be all buddy buddy and stuff, right? Won't be my best friend. And I wasn't at a point yet where that was okay. I was like, I'm thinking, how in the world can, after everything that you put me through, can you even remotely think that's cool? And I let him have it with both barrels. And all he said was, "I'm sorry to feel that way." And the look on his face was, I can't get it out of my head now. It was awful. He passed away from alcoholism. He drowned. He drowned as a result of alcohol. So I never got the chance to make amends to him in person. I made amends to him at the grave, and and did everything I'm supposed to do. But it's the one thing that kind of pops in my mind probably more than anything else, is that me needing to make that right. And I can't. So I have to work on that a lot. I have to put that in the proper place. Can only imagine how that would feel for my two of my oldest kids saw me drinking, or were around me when I was drinking. How that would feel to have them come, tell me that. I have super relationships with my kids and my family now. We don't, seemingly everything's fine. I don't think they had hold any grudges or anything. Yeah, I can't. After going 10, 11, and 12, we got, most sponsor took me through 10, 11, and 12. And the things that we did then, things that he told me to do, have formed habits that I still do every single day. I do it every day. I'm a really, really simple, basic person when it comes to what I need to do. How do I stay sober? I'm not the guy who's going to grab all the books and stuff and figure it all out. And here's what I found. And I'm not that guy. I follow what's worked for all these years that has been established. I'm not trying to change the world. I don't change any of it, as a matter of fact. So yeah, I'm blessed beyond measure. I couldn't imagine it being any better. Life is life. I always have issues like everybody else. I'm not the ideal AA member. I do my best. I'm not a poster child for it. Part of the problem is I'm not a social butterfly. I'm kind of an introvert. I know where to get that help if I need it. And it's always there. Yeah, I can't, the gifts that I've gotten as a result, and all along the way, it's like when that failed interlock device result never got revealed. It's like, it seemed like things good happened to me at the rate that I was doing AA. It's like the more involved and the more I was doing, the more that happened. And that's completely unexplainable, but that's the truth. And I've been sober for 18 years and I've looked back and thought about this stuff. And I'm like, wow, how does that happen? Yeah. And I've been at the same job for 28 years. Thank goodness after that DUI I got, they allowed me to stay on and been there for 28 years. And I've been made a member of the leadership team. And my boss recently told a room full of leaders that I was the most responsible employee he's ever seen. God's grace. Who would have thought? Thank you for letting me share.
Yeah.